Your ATM is safe. Your banks are safe. There's enough cash in the financial system. And there is an infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve.
Don't you?
Then I would sell my Bitcoin right into this rally. And believe me, I had been a believer one time in Bitcoin. Not here, not now. Find somebody to love. Don't you?
Arbitrage on this trend has been margin called.
Think you was a hook. Trust your idols, now they got your shoe. Believe in the crooks. Hell of a saint. Are they cooking the books? Save up a decade, now lost in a day. Now the new rent is getting away. Bigger the bet. Bigger ripple effect. When it all blows off, it is you who will pay.
Behind the ass, it's not the success. Pull back the curtains and what do you get? And it's the risk with a big tippy net. Made from your savings. That's 401k. Give it to the other side of the trade. Socialized losses while we've been the game. Works to fall in this reckless war. Cause you're just a pawn in the control in this game.
Money talks and pay for the show. Pay for the cloud. Pay for the throne. Pay for the media to lie to our face. Taught the truth so we repeat our mistakes. Sell us a dream that never delivers. What we're here. Fees, including the ticket, siphoning funds from the mouthless bigots, blindly supplying to the all complicit. Money is cheap and addicted to growth. Commingled to risk, so nobody knows. The higher we go to a damaged collateral, another excuse for oppressive control. The government captures part of the play. Reapers of value at the end of the day. We're calling for help, but nobody came. When bailouts are pawned and completed.
Money deeply rots at the core. Don't believe intentions are pure. This crypto contagion stems from a system that incentivized fraud. As schemes get more complex, and fallible humans left unchecked. Playing the dark is how you get wrecked, and our economies are lost.
What would happen if we take our money out of its systems? Why protest our labor when we can pull out our capital? Where would we be if our money enriched us? Simply by holding purchasing power. How do we build a base? Replace the controlling effects with the will of free markets.
Build an independent system to remove the risk of corruption.
Step two.
Move our savings into that system so no one can ever touch it.
Step three.
Our saves, ensure all activities move this way. With our own money, everything changed. We no longer positive to the family.
It's hard as I desire to earn my way. And with time, gaining a larger piece of pie. Or it yours to verify. Money is data of your own when the match keeps scoring of politicians. Cuts and capturing parts of play, so we reap the value at the end.
So we can move value without being censored. Move up from gambling and saving. Move up from all of the politics. Move on to the end of the internet.
So we don't got the trust to be what they say. So we're freedom and what can be taken away.
So we treat and punish all the same.
So we can end the control of this game.
Knowing the truth will break the frame. Now our perspectives forever change. Truth is the key for us to reclaim.
Open the door. It's the game.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Bitcoin Veterans Spaces, episode 95. Five more episodes till we reach 100, and time is absolutely flying by, and I am absolutely honored to be your host of the Bitcoin Veterans Spaces, and that you let me talk for 95 episodes, and it really means a lot that you all are tuning in consistently every day, Monday through Friday, at 10 a.m. While everyone's still trickling in, you know, refilling your coffee, going to bone broth. If you're over on the West Coast, you know, just getting the gunk out of your eyes. I want to give some shout outs to the listeners who are consistently tuning in. So good morning, L and Ace. Good morning, Miss Penny. Good morning, Daniel, King Bateman, Karen, Cosmo. I got Taggart War. Good morning. And I have Mr. Bitcoin. Good morning, everybody. And of course we have Shane and Wade in the audience. Good morning. Let me send you guys an invite if you want to join. And we have Bob Van Kirk up here in the panel. How was your evening, afternoon yesterday, sir?
Good, great, and wonderful. As always, thank you. How's it going with you, Coleman?
It was good. It was it's a little cold down here. I'm sure you're in the same boat, Bob. For us Texans, we're not really used to this cold. anything with a 3 or 4 in front of it in the weather is pretty chilly, and it kind of shuts down the cities. So it's just kind of hunker down and just try and work from home and do everything that we can. But it's kind of funny. For those who don't know, I grew up in Canada, so we would get down like January, February, it'd be minus 30, minus 40, pretty much for a whole month. And so it's funny how quickly you adapt to your environment. Is now, I think, getting down to freezing is extremely cold. So I just think that's kind of funny. But
do you have your blood thinned? Did you get your chili and Fritos?
I did. I did do chili and Fritos. We did that yesterday, actually. I'm so fortunate. We have some of the best neighbors next to us. So me and my next door neighbor, we kind of have this trade-off. So he's really good at making cocktails. So he brings me over a drink, and I usually just give him some extra food. So I gave him some Frito pie chili yesterday, and he made me an old fashioned. So I like this arrangement we have. And for those of you who are unaware, adding Fritos to your chili without beans is kind of taking it to the next step. I encourage everybody to give that a try. Good morning, Shane. How's the weather in your part of the world?
Morning, Coleman. If you want to come be my neighbor, man, I will swap bourbon and chili and Fritos with no and no chili with no beans, man. That is right on. Beans should not be in chili. Man, I'll tell you what, we were expecting a couple more inches of accumulation. We've kind of only got it dusting up here in North Georgia mountains, in my section of the mountains right now, and I'm watching my kids lose their mind. They were all prepared to go out, you know, this morning, take the dogs out, and it hasn't snowed up here in about 5 years. So it's been a while, and you know, they're getting a little bit older now. So it's like, got to try to get this one in, and they're hoping and praying like there's more accumulation on the way. But yeah, right now they've just kind of like got all their stuff on and ready, and they're just sitting at the window going, damn it. let's go snow.
So Shane, this isn't Bitcoin related, but I do have a question on the beans in chili. Is it true that if you put beans in chili, then it's considered a stew? Is that the case?
I just consider it ruined. I don't know if it's a stew or not. I'm not a bean guy. I never have been. My mom and dad put beans in chili, and I love chili. I just hate beans. And I don't know. If that's your thing, great. It's just, it has no place in my house. That's for damn sure.
We used to do it as a kid. We used to put beans in a lot of our food, but that was more for like an economic thing. We didn't grow up, you know, with a ton of money, so we had to stretch some stuff. And so, and being a teenage kid, I used to just eat out the house. So that's why we always did it. But now, you know, a little bit better situation, so we don't have to cut our food with beans. But I don't know, my son's just about to start hitting, you know, he's getting to that age where he's eating more and more and more frequently. So maybe beans will be added to our chili soon.
I grew up in the Midwest, and we would put noodles in our chili half the time. And I think that's something that is foreign to some people as well.
Yes.
Go ahead, Shane. Sorry.
I was going to say, I used to do some judging of chili over at the Stone Mountain Park here, just east of Atlanta when I was a lot younger. And some of the stuff that some people put in chili, man, and you got to the point where you just try to smell it before you put it in your mouth. And a lot of that stuff was just not edible. But there were some, you know, really interesting takes on chili outside of that where, like Bob, noodles are kind of a new thing, but a lot of guys down here will put rice in their chili. Not bad. It's just, you know, not where I come from kind of stuff. But, and I would say, some of the best chili I've ever had is wild game. You know, if you can get, you know, deer, or, you know, venison or bison or any of those kinds of things, elk for sure. That is some of the best chili you may ever have.
Okay. This is killing me. I was having technical issues. I couldn't join. You can't have chili without beans. Like that's not chili. That's just meat and crappy crackers, guys. Come on. Ugh.
I'm gonna kick you off the
stage. Pain to have to sit here and listen to you guys talk about
no, that's shitcoin chili is what that is.
Oh no, that's Fritos, man. It's like seed oils and all sorts of evils in there. Instead of beans are good. They got good fiber in them. I got some protein. This is like physical. You guys don't understand like the rest that you've started my day off with, that I couldn't speak to refute these blasphemous claims about your fake chili. I feel a little bit. It's going to take me some time.
The arbiter of this will have to be Joe Consorti, because he hasn't been a part of this. So we'll have to ask him when he gets on.
Yeah, Joe's going to be the deciding factor in this. And Eomar, I think you're on your own little island. And so I'd like to set in motion to call any chili that has beans in it shitcoin chili. All in favor, give me a thumbs up.
Aye.
You guys are just taking like a shitty like Bitcoin Cash version of a hard fork of chili right now. And I will stand here correct and alone if I must.
Eomar, I was going to send, we're going to send an invite for you to come join this hunting trip. But if this is how you view your chili, I'm going to be hard pressed to take you out in the wild. I might not be able to trust your instincts on this.
You guys would be like shocked that like you've accepted this imposter for so long if I made you guys chili.
All right, so you need to just come down south here, and we'll hook you up with some real chili. You don't have to add Fritos to it if you don't want to. But I got to admit, I make a really, really good chili. So anytime you're down south, hit me up, and I'll make sure we get some chili.
Does that mean chili pair well with well-done ketchup steak?
If you put ketchup on your steak, I judge you, one, as a man, that you have to have a condiment with your steak. Two, I judge you as a man that you don't know how to cook a steak. And I really probably couldn't take you seriously with any advice you ever give me. I don't know. It drives me insane when you see someone asking for steak sauce with a steak. I'm just, yeah.
I mean, you guys already took the beans out of chili. So next you're going to be like pushing a bunch of like Beyond Burgers together and calling it a steak. So you guys are like only one step removed.
Absolutely not. We are not.
I think we're closer to the carnivore diet there without those beans, my man.
Lentils is not a substitute. That's a Texas thing. And I have to admit, it does change up the chili. It's kind of a game changer. I do like it. I know it's horrible for you. Like, again, we can go down that avenue. Don't tell Matthew Lysak when he joins the show that I'm
100% telling him.
He's definitely going to shame me on that. But it is really, really good. I really like it. But you know what? I wanted to actually – so just so everybody's aware, we're not avoiding Joe. Joe Consorti just reached out to me. He's feeling a little under the weather, so he's just getting ready now. And he's going to reach back out in about 5 to 10 minutes to let me know if he's going to be able to join today. But I did want to kind of like, American Hoddle was talking about hunting, or actually he started talking about guns, and then he kind of went into hunting. And I'd like to know kind of from the group, like if we should do a show on it, or if there's some movement or I guess interest to go ahead and put on something with the BV, the Bitcoin veterans on like a hunting class and how to do it and kind of the ins and out. Cause I was kind of taken aback that there were so few people that really know how to do that. So if you guys, let's continue this conversation. Let's talk and let's see.
Man, I'll tell you what, I have not been in the woods a lot this year, cause of a lot of, you know, just work and busyness. But, you know, this afternoon, me and the daughter actually are planning on going out and having to hunt in the snow for the first time, or at least the dusting of snow. And I got to tell you, like, we've got till the end of January down here, at least for archery. I think we've got a couple more days on rifle. So, you know, if this is one of those things that you're interested in, man, come up, ask questions. If you're not interested in it at all, because you think, you know, hunting is one of those things where it's kind of, you know, like the rifles have got, you know, too much power and it's just too easy to hit deer and all those kind of things. Take it from a guy that used to think that, you know, after coming out of the Marine Corps, I wasn't even a hunter. And then one of my buddies introduced me to hunting through, bow hunting. And I got to tell you, once I started to understand more about the land management and herd management, I got to tell you, it changed my entire perspective on being a good outdoorsman and taking care of the land and the animals around it. And then obviously culling what needs to be culled, and not going after trophies. And that's, I think that, you know, that in itself was enough. And then, you know, the byproduct of that is you have a skill set that comes along that you can teach another generation that feeds them food that is not tampered with. I should say the least tampered with. I know people get into, you know, discussions about spraying and animals that eat outside and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, in terms of, you know, I think the most natural food you can get, this is that byproduct and is absolutely amazing for your family.
Yeah, I haven't hunted in a long time. I used to hunt, you know, I went on a couple like excursions with my dad when I was a young kid. But he stopped hunting and then, you know, I hunted like small game with the boys, you know, like squirrel and rabbit and stuff. But I haven't hunted in a long time. So it's definitely something, I think would be interesting, you know, fun to get back into. You know, a buddy of mine, he's over a couple states across, but not too far. You know, he and I have been talking about, you know, getting into it and maybe doing a trip or something, just to go. I typically go from like nothing to just like diving in head first rather than like little steps. So, for me, it's like if I dive in full force, then, and if I like it, then great. I know. And if I don't, then, you know, at least it's not like some gradual long process that takes me to get to my decision there. So, but you know, somebody like, that enjoys, like shooting and I enjoy eating meat, I feel like it kind of makes sense that I would like, you know, hunting and stuff. I think the biggest barrier, and this is like coming from my buddy that was like, he grew up in a city, so he never hunted before. The biggest barrier is like knowing how to, you know, like clean the animal and stuff. Like if you get a deer, like how to gut it and get it out of the woods and stuff like that. That like is his biggest reservation. When he was talking about going hunting is he had no idea where to start really. So he's like, you know, watched a couple of YouTube videos and just walked out into the woods. But you know, it's a tough thing to start on your own, especially if you're in like a new area that you don't know, like experienced people to help you out. So, I definitely think there's a market for it. For people that would be interested in it.
Yeah. I grew up in Canada and you take a lot of things for advantage, when you just live up there. So as young as I can remember, I was always hunting squirrels or rabbits. And then as soon as I was old enough to start using my bow, I was hunting for deer. And so for me, there's just something like instinctual and primal in me when like you go out there and you're successful. If anyone tells you that they're always successful when they're going hunting, they're probably just telling you a hunting story. Probably not a lot of truth to that. I think, but like 99% of the time you only have so many tags. So only one time when you go out, you're going to be successful. But I think the stories for me actually arise in the memories or when the times where you didn't get anything. Like those are the ones that really stand out to me where you're just like, you had bad luck, something happened or just a complete like circus. And like those are the memories that I always enjoyed, you know, getting back to a camp or getting back to the hotel after you just walked like 100 miles and chasing deer. It's so fun. And then like when you're finally successful and you're able to connect with that animal, like the appreciation you have, and they're just something. I don't know. Like I just feel like my whole state of mind and my body changes, and you just, you know, it depends on how you want to look at it. But I remember the old hunting guides when I was a kid, like they always used to say, like this deer was born and raised. So on this day, like you were able to take it. And so it's really, really interesting. And for those who think hunting is violent or inhumane, get out into the wild and see like how animals behave and how they hunt. Like us harvesting a deer, an elk, a moose is so much more humane than allowing a wolf or a bear to get to it or just for it to die from starvation or some illness. Again, you have to make sure that you're hunting. Go ahead, Omar.
I just, you know, anytime people say that, I just think of this time, I used to, hike a lot through the woods, just like random woods and stuff. And there's like this old, like stone, like, foundation, and the coyotes around there would always like herd the deer into like this area. Cause there's basically like, you know, three walls on a side and they would just rip it apart and you would find deer just like scattered for like like, I don't know how far exactly, but like, it felt like a mile, you'd find just parts of deer. So like, you know, they're not putting that deer down and then ripping it apart, you know? So, sorry, maybe a little graphic for the audience there, but you know, shooting an animal, you know, is a much more humane way of ending its life than otherwise. And I think, you know, if you guys ever listen to Joe Rogan, he talks about it, you know, if you're getting one of the older, bigger deer and stuff like that, like you're giving it a quicker, cleaner end than it would have otherwise had. So, you know, I think it's, I think there is like a big disconnect between like the fact that like our food, whether you buy it from the store or you hunt it, you know, it's coming from some sort of animal. You know, like I said, I don't really hunt right now, but I make sure that like my kids understand like, oh, well, you know, you're eating a steak that came from a cow. You know, and that's why we don't waste our food, because, you know, we have to kill a cow to get that. So, you know, just so like they don't get that weird inversion of like a steak isn't from an animal or something. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's important for them to understand that. And, you know, if you hunt and you bring your kids hunting and stuff, then they'll just naturally understand that. You know, there's always like the Bambi thing, you know. I'm pretty confident if I bring my kids hunting with me, they're going to cry if we get a deer. But the, you know, they'll still eat it, I think. So
I think it's very important that if you're able to bring your kids hunting, get them to see it, get them to go out there. I remember that I had to be super young. My dad would bring me out. So again, Northern Canada, it gets cold. When we went hunting together, when I was just a little guy, he would just bring a sleeping bag and I would just fall asleep in the sleeping bag hunting with them. But it's stuff like that. Like, I have fragmented memories of it, but again, it's just spending that time and going out there and getting exposed to it. And again, your kids just want to hang out with you. So if you go and bring them hunting, like, they're going to be happy with that. And if you're successful with it, like, that's just icing on the cake. But get them to know where their food comes from and why it's so important to be able to do it. Cause during COVID, like, again, there was huge supply issues, and you know, you couldn't really do anything. So if you didn't know, like, if things went worse, you have to be able to provide for your family. And I don't think anybody's going to have any qualms with you going out and killing to provide for your family when you guys are starving. So I didn't mean to cut off, talk over you, Shane.
No, I really, you know, this is such a great conversation, and you and Mark kind of hit on part of what I wanted to talk about. It was that connection to your food and understanding, and that gratefulness. I think, you know, there's a lot of talk about being present and being mindful, conscious of what you are and what you're doing in this world. And I think, you know, a lot of times when we unwrap some hamburger or we unwrap, you know, a steak or something like that, if, you know, from a butcher, there's this disconnect that I think is fairly spiritual and profound in terms of a disconnection. And I don't think people really understand what it's done to our society. When you're harvesting your own food, there's such a deeper connection and a gratefulness. That gratefulness, I don't know if you guys pray before you guys eat, and I don't judge either. It's one of those things where I know there are times when people are more grateful, and then there are times, obviously, when we're not on that continuum. But when you're sourcing, you know, that meat from your own backyard, say, you know, like we get to, it's profound. You go out to a freezer where you've done a ton of work. You know, if you understand how to quarter and process your own animals, it's a lot of work. I mean, you've got to first, you know, get it in and get it, you know, cold enough to where you can handle it safely and everything. And then once you start stripping things like silver skin off and understanding the different cuts and what should be, you know, left as a, you know, a roast or something like that versus what you're going to grind, and then actually getting it back into the freezer so that it can sit there, you know, for possibly a year, you know, or even longer sometimes. When you pull that out to feed your family, you know exactly where it came from. And that connection, that gratefulness of where it came from, the memories that you have from, you know, maybe harvesting it with a child or, you know, with a friend or something like that, or taking, you know, maybe your brother came out and helped you haul this deer out of a creek bed or something like that up a mountain. There's something so much more to that. And I think that leads into, you know, kind of, you know, what you were talking about too, Coleman, is sometimes we'll sit in the woods and a lot of times, you'll sit in the woods, and I'm kind of that guy that will pass on a lot of game just so I can go back and sit in the woods. And there's something, I think, to this as well. There's you know, hippies will call it forest bathing. I will just call it, you know, kind of getting your senses and your energy right. And I'm a big believer in this, where a lot of people, maybe kind of blow this off, but there is a certain energy that comes with immersing yourself in a forest, and that, you know, that primeval forest where your senses are not just, you know, looking. And a lot of our engagement these days is through our ears and through our eyes and through screens. And it's not real, right? It's getting faker and gayer every day. That's one of those things where when you're out there and you understand that everything out here is trying to survive, and you understand that, you know, even down to the ants and the spiders, if you're in the wrong place in the wrong time, you know, they can cause some damage to you because they're trying to eke out their existence, and there are no rules for these things. And so you start to understand this balance where, you know, if you leave them alone, they'll leave you alone, kind of thing. And that time that you're spending in a different energy environment where all of your senses, your taste, your touch, your smell, like all of these things, you have a heightened awareness, and it brings something extra and something, I think, peaceful, back into your state of being. And I can't help but think that with all these, you know, breakthroughs in quantum science, that that energy that you're transferring out there, especially, you know, when you're around, structures that hold energy like granite or quartz, those things have, you know, lasting vibrational energy for a long time. And some of that, you know, you guys, you know, I think, you know, we forget a lot of times that for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, this was just the way. This is what you did, and this is what your ancestors did. So you are the culmination of tens of thousands of years and thousands of people who eked out a living doing these things, surviving on these things, suffering through the elements to try to feed themselves. And you're reminded, like, okay, if this is where I fit into the bigger picture of, you know, this, you know, human complex, it's going to, you know, hopefully continue for, you know, from, you know, now and for another 10,000 years at least, you know, what is my part in this? And you start to become more mindful of what your role is and how you can help not only your, you know, your children and grandchildren, but how you can help humans in general move forward in a better way. And I think, you know, this is fairly philosophical for hunting, but I think that's one of the big things that the hunting community isn't able to doesn't speak well on. And I think that's a shame, because it is truly, I think, for me and my family, I think it is the biggest gift that comes from that type of lifestyle.
Yeah. To touch back what you had said, I think you're right. All of your senses are just absolutely heightened when you go hunting. And I think a lot of successful hunters, like, as you start doing it, you start to rely just more on your intuitions and just stuff that doesn't make any sense, and you just kind of go with it. And I found that when I go with that instinct, that intuition, whatever you want to describe it, I'm always successful when I go with that, versus just looking and just kind of like, well, I don't think, you'll just think yourself out of it. So again, there's something about it. And if you have the opportunity to get out there, get out there. And if you don't, I was thinking about this last night. So I want to thank you, AC, for bringing this up and, allowing us to talk about this. But I do think that we need to sit down and talk about putting on a class like this, because I think it's extremely important for everybody to know how to do it. But also it's just fun. It's just fun sitting around and talking to people and cracking jokes and, again, cracking jokes at inappropriate times, and you got to stay quiet while there's, you know, deer or animals in front of you. Again, it's just some of my favorite memories come from hunting. And so, again, I can't recommend that enough. Bob, we haven't heard from you, so I don't know if you have anything you want to add on.
Yeah, no, it's really good stuff. And I think, Shane, great reminder just from like a thankfulness standpoint, does have me reflecting on, yeah, just being grateful, whether it's, something you've harvested yourself or, even just, you know, a simple meal. We do pray, but, you know, sometimes you just do it because it's, rote. And, I think, being mindful of the situation and taking a second to appreciate the things that you have are, it's an important thing to do.
I've got to ask you, Shane, have you ever just ate the river raw, the liver raw after you've killed an animal?
Yeah, I've done, done heart and liver. Not much, you know, just a bite or two. I think it's one of those things that's more of an acquired, practice, but I got to tell you, you know, we do save those and we do, incorporate them into, you know, different things, you know, whether it's chili or meatloaf. Organs are great for you, especially the heart and liver.
So you put heart and liver in your chili, but you won't put beans.
Carnivore, man.
Fritos aren't carnivore.
Fritos are not carnivore. You're absolutely right.
You don't have the carnivore Fritos in your neck of the woods?
Switch out the Fritos for pork rinds and you'll be all set. We save the heart and the liver as well. And I do think, a lot of local farmers will sell it, already blend up with ground beef. They call it a caveman blend and it's pretty low mixture. It's like a 20 or 30% rate, but the benefits of incorporating that in your food, especially if you're going to have it in chili, you can't taste it. I serve it all the time to friends and family and no one has any idea that it tastes. Because again, liver and heart have a distinct taste, but when you mix it in with that, you have no idea it's in there. So I always incorporate it in there. But I have never, I was just curious, Shane, because I've never done it raw. I've never took a bite of the liver or the heart. So maybe when we go up on our hunting trip this year or next year, we'll all have to do that. Just pass it around, take a little bite. Sounds like it'll be fun.
First time I ate heart was purely by accident. I was living in Russia and I didn't know what the word was. So I was like, that's some sort of meat. And I like got my dish and I was eating it and I was like, this is strange texture. Then I figured out what it was when I saw like the little tiny aorta on the chicken hearts. So, yeah, heart's not too bad, but, you know, probably better if you know what you're getting into there.
Yeah, I would say outside of texture, I don't think the taste is really that crazy. It just tastes a little extra irony. What about you, Shane?
Yeah, there's definitely, you're right on. There's definitely that iron and it should be, you know, obviously it's filtering blood, which has a ton of iron in it to begin with. But, just for anybody who's out there who hasn't done this and doesn't know animals, you got to be careful. You don't want to be doing this with things like bears or hogs. You know, this is strictly, maybe a hoof type animal, and I mean deer and elk. I haven't ever tried anything in terms of a goat, but you need to be very, you know, specific with this and inspect it first. If there are spots or, you know, possibly worse, like, you know, there can be, things like worms. And obviously if it's a diseased animal, then that's a good place to just check what kind of animal you have for that you've taken anyway. The liver is going to tell a lot about how healthy that animal. If it's nice and rich, and purple, then it's probably really healthy. But if it's, you know, splotchy and it's got some discoloration on it or possibly worse, you know, that's probably a diseased animal, which is going to tell you, hey, you know, maybe this is best left for the vultures and the coyotes.
I have to ask you, how many times have you come across that? Because I'm trying to think back. I've never seen an animal where we noticed that it was sick or diseased.
Really, really rare in deer. In, you know, little varmints, you'll see it more often, that have, you know, things like worms. But yeah, deer, I very rarely come across a sick deer. A lot of times with deer, what you're going to notice is they have, some sort of like nasal cavity type of, you know, parasite or something like that. It happens all the time. Doesn't mean that the deer is spoiled or anything else. It just, you know, that's usually where parasites, especially in this region, tend to gravitate towards on those animals.
Yeah, so good to know. Thank you for that. Really quick, I want to give a thank you to our partners, Black Sheep Ammo. Restock your ammo, blacksheepammo.com. Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms and tactical training at paladintowertactics.com. Punch Plate, stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate. Check them out at punchplate.com. And Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining. Use the code BTCVETS with an S for 5% off your order. And if you pay with Bitcoin, there's another 10% off. So potential for 15% off your order, solosatoshi.com. And they just released a new miner, that has a touch face, screen. So it'll act like your block clocks. It'll show the Bitcoin price. It'll show the time. And so it was really, really cool. They had it on sale, I guess, 2 days ago, and it sold out pretty quick. So I might try and look to see if they have it on again and try and acquire one of those. It looked pretty nice. Mine Bitcoin while you can tell time. So can't beat that. And last but not least, Bitcoin Alaska, July 5th and 6th. In Juneau, this is a family-friendly conference, so make sure you bring your spouse, bring your kids. Tickets and lodging are going to go quick, so check them out. The link's up in the nest, bitcoinalaska.org. If you want to get into hunting, there's no better place to go up to Alaska and do some hunting. Again, it's just so remote, so rugged. I absolutely love it. Heard back from Joe Consorti. In case you missed it, he told me right after we launched the show that he was feeling under the weather and he was going to give himself a couple minutes to see if he could pull through. But looks like we're rescheduling him for Monday morning at 10 a.m. So no Joe today, but we'll go ahead and start running into some more relevant news outside of hunting. 16 years ago today, Hal Finney made the famous post. He was running Bitcoin. So for those of you who don't know Hal Finney, he was one of the first people, that really got on with Bitcoin. He made the famous, famous prediction that Bitcoin was going to hit, was it 1 million or 10 million, per coin in the next 20 or 30 years? Anyone on the panel know that off the top of their head?
I would guess it's got to be 10 million in the next 20 years. I mean, anybody who's lowballing it at a million in 20 years, I think, is kind of missing the boat.
Well, he made that prediction in 2009. So I'll have to fact check that. So I apologize, but really instrumental. But he, I didn't write down in my notes. What disease did Hal have that he passed away from?
ALS.
Thank you. So it was really unfortunate. His wife, is still, part of the Bitcoin community. She still helps out. But it was really unfortunate. She was on I keep referencing the What Bitcoin Did podcast. But I guess when you've done over 1,000 episodes, you get referenced quite a bit. But one of the things I want to talk about is that, I guess everyone's trying to figure out who Satoshi is. And a lot of people thought Hal might have been Satoshi. And, his wife was talking about how she received, death threats. She, a lot of people tried to SWAT her house. That's where you call the SWAT. You call 911 and you pretend like someone's holding somebody hostage or that you're going to kill yourself, and the SWAT comes into their house and like takes everybody. So it was really unfortunate. I'll have to find the link and I'll put it up in the nest, but it's pretty crazy. So that's why I do think it's important that we all respect, the mystery of of Satoshi. And I don't think we should ever try and figure out who it was. It'll just put extreme unwanted attention on them or her or them or like the group, and their families. So just always have that in mind when you're trying to point to people that you think may or may not be Satoshi Nakamoto. But if Shane, Bob, or Yomar, if you have any comments about Hal or anything you want to talk about, feel free.
I guess I wasn't in Bitcoin then, but I do kind of see, I've kind of looked at, some of the things that Hal has said and done and kind of the way he conducted his life. And, I gotta tell you, if he ended up being, Satoshi or, part of the inner circle there, what a classy guy. If that's the guy that founded and birthed Bitcoin, it's very fitting and poetic, I think, in kind of a dark sense, but at the same time, this is a gift. And I think I've heard other people say it is, I think they're going to talk about, this gift to the world as, a kind of BC AD type of moment, when people really understand exactly what this is, and that, you know, it was given to us by another human being that, you know, put it into, you know, code and gave it away. Like, what a, whoever it was, you know, if it was Hal or, you know, just an outstanding, you know, foresight and gift. And I think, you know, understanding kind of, you know, Ross Ulbricht's position, that guy has made, you know, the right decision, especially when you start to look at, you know, guys who have tried to patented, you know, free energy, or, you know, unstoppable energy and machines that, you know, capture and produce it, where they always end up trying to get, you know, to market first, and then they end up getting schwacked. And it's like, this is a pretty cool scenario for Bitcoin.
It is. And I think that's, you know, a lot of people say Satoshi's greatest gift was, you know, creating or discovering Bitcoin. But I think it has a really strong argument could be made that the greatest gift he did was just stepping away. I mean, I always refer to Satoshi as in male form. So again, however you view him is fine. But I do think that's extremely important to the survival and longevity of Bitcoin, is that, again, they can't point, and there's nobody that, again, they can go ahead and tap on the shoulder. So, it's pretty crazy. And, in case, you didn't hear me correctly, Fran Finney is Hal Finney's wife. I thought this was interesting news that came through. So Scott Bissonnette is going to be the new Treasury Secretary. I think on the 16th next week, he kind of gets, appointed by the, by Congress, and then he doesn't get actually taken the role until Trump is sworn in. But it was just released that he's tapped Senator Lummis to chair the Senate Banking's new Digital Asset Subcommittee. So the subcommittee is going to be tasked with developing a comprehensive regulatory framework for all digital assets, aiming to balance consumer protection with the promotion of innovation within the United States. And it's going to create and advance legislation related to cryptocurrencies, ensuring that laws keep pace with the technological advancements. So I think that's a really good pick for the subcommittee. And I do think we'll get some more clarity. Again, it's going to be broad, so it'll be cryptocurrencies, but most important with Bitcoin. And I do think, because I know Senator Lummis has put it through, there'll be more favorable tax laws for Bitcoin. So Shane, Hilmar, Bob, if you have any thoughts on this or on this news, let's hear it.
Yeah, I think these are all, you know, positive things. I think the big risk here is that, you know, one, people overhype it ahead of time because, you know, the proof is in the pudding. We want to see what these folks come up with. But also that, it's done in a way, you know, one of my concerns is that it promotes crypto as a whole, not Bitcoin. So it keeps the distraction going. So I think, you know, if it's Bitcoin focused or more slanted that way, I think that's a much better outcome than, you know, a crypto task force or a crypto committee.
I do think you're right. It's going to shine a lot of light, and you're going to see shitcoins, you know, thrive in this new environment. But I do think it's going to be temporary. And temporary, I don't mean like weeks or months. It'll temporary is in years, but I do think their time is going to come to an end eventually, because people will just, they'll be tired of getting rugged. They'll be tired of hearing all the lies. They'll be tired because, again, they have nothing to build on. And I think the newest thing that was released over the last week was, there was a representative for XRP, was speaking how Bank of America is doing all internal transactions through XRP and on XRP rails. And so, one, I think that's a lie. I don't believe that for a second. And two, What makes these shitcoins special? There is absolutely nothing. The technology is open source, right? So everybody can look at how they're doing it. And if you have these large banks, Bank of America, JP Morgan, why are they going to pay your company or pay your fee using your technology when they can just go ahead and copy it. Maybe hire a couple of your developers to come work for them, say, yeah, we're going to try these transactions and see how they work, but then go ahead and fire them and just duplicate it and have their own system. So again, all of these shit coins are going to zero, and it's just, it drives me insane that, you know, like you said, Bob, there's going to be a little bit more time for them to thrive and prosper until everybody realizes what a scam they are. Shane or Omar, do you guys have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, I'm not a bear on Bitcoin right now. I just, you know, there's obviously some things at play. And, you know, this is good news, but, you know, I'm kind of the mindset right now that we're kind of in a period of max pain again. And I think that's just Bitcoin in general. We go through these ups and downs. And, you know, if you're watching price on a daily basis, I highly suggest you don't do that, especially if you're new to Bitcoin. Please just stay humble, stack your sats. Don't worry about it. Don't watch it. Just let it do what it does. In 4 years from now, it'll change your life. But, with everybody that's trying to manipulate and gain as much power as possible, you know, I think there are a lot of people with, you know, just these, you know, laser eyes out there that are completely focused, but are completely, misleading. And I don't mean that like, you know, I don't think it's intentional. I think there's a lot of hope, maybe too much hopium out there. I think this is going to be more of a slog. I think there's going to be a much bigger fight, ahead of us. And I honestly think they're just getting started in trying to, you know, play this market and manipulate it and still take yield. And this fiat mindset that has, you know, in really, you know, encapsulated people because they've been indoctrinated with it. They've lived their entire lives. And, you know, let's face it, you know, the boomer generation has all the money right now. And that money is solely in the hands of people who don't understand the technology that we're talking about or that we, you know, that we're learning about. And as that, you know, generation dies off and the wealth is transferred to a younger generation, you know, there are people who are trying to gain that from government perspectives that are going to, you know, try to use it against us in this fight to adopt Bitcoin even, and which, you know, is, I understand it. You know, these same people that have been inoculated by wealth and comfort and prestige and luxury are the same people that, you know, are going to try to continue fighting this for as long as possible. I think in the end we win, but in the time that they still have the printing press and we're still on a fiat standard around the world, I think they're going to cause a lot of pain and a lot of discomfort. And I don't think, you know, when you look around at, you know, maybe that Jimmy Carter funeral the other day where he had most of the ex-presidents sleeping and even the current president looked pretty damn sleepy there. Or I should say the incoming president. It's like you've got a generation who's, you know, at the helm right now, I should say. I say at the helm. They're all puppets, but they're being told what to do and what levers to press and what votes to take, and what to say in front of the cameras and what to post on X by their handlers. And that's, I think, you know, that's one of those things we need to keep in the back of our mind is like, this is the time we have to double down. This is the time where we have to get in front of as many people as possible in our local communities and our local businesses and teach these people, you know, what this can do for them and do it in a way that, you know, seems sensible. And I think obviously, you know, the generations that are coming up, the millennials that are coming into their own, Gen X and, you know, this has got to be, you know, our main effort going forward for, you know, the foreseeable future is we've got to work twice as hard now to continue the momentum that we have because these guys have got all sorts of tricks and they've got, you know, the courts and the bureaucracy on their side. So like I'm not, you know, sitting here trying to pee in anybody's cornflakes, but at the same time, I think it's worthwhile to start, you know, thinking about this as adversarially as possible. And if it doesn't, you know, end up being that hard, then great. You know, that's a win for us.
Yeah. And that's how we're going to make the changes by going out there and talking about it and showing the world, leading by example. Again, I really liked what Natalie Brunell said when she was on our space, is the majority of people aren't going to remember when they're hearing about Bitcoin for the first time. They're not going to remember what you're telling them. The lasting impression they're going to have is the way you're delivering that message. So if you're just screaming and shouting to make your point, like, again, it's going to put a bad taste in their mouth. But if you're just really patient, and again, show them and make it relatable, make the problems that you're trying, that you know Bitcoin fixes, applicable to their situations, it's going to last and it's going to hit home a little bit harder for them. So again, it's a lot easier said than done. I find myself, you know, you start doing this for so long and you keep having the same conversations and you keep hearing the same rebuttals, and the lack of effort from, you know, no coiners to go ahead and try and start learning about it. It does take its toll, and sometimes your answers can be a little quick or a little sharp. But just try and have a little self-restraint and just try and just be as pleasant as possible. But like Shane said, I do encourage everyone to go out there to your local communities, your small businesses, your local meetup groups, whatever group you're part of. Just start talking about it and try and get more people, you know, interested. Host an event. Go out and I wouldn't host an event at your house, but go find a local business where you can just go hang out and have some drinks and just see how many people you can get there. Challenge yourself. Say, hey, can I get 5 outsiders to join me, you know, at this local brewery here on a Thursday night? And go for it. And then if you do that, okay, well, next time let's see if we can, you know, let's get 8 or 10. And then just slowly it starts to grow. And once you start having people attend these meetings, your work becomes easier because you don't have to work as hard to try and grab another 5 or 6 people. You have 5 or 6 allies now that can go ahead and do that work for you. Hey, Shane, go grab a couple people and bring them next week. You know, Bob, go do the same thing. And then again, you slowly start growing your army and you just start to grow this network, and this is how we're going to make the change. I don't see people, and maybe there are, so forgive me if I'm wrong, but I don't see XRP, you know, people going out there and talking about how XRP is going to change the world. I just don't see it. I don't see any real life situations for it. So again, be the change you want to be. Don't wait for somebody else to do it. Just do it yourself. Yomer or Bob, do you guys have any comments you want to make on that?
No, I mean, same stuff, really. You know, I just don't see why, you know, every time Bitcoin gets higher, like, it's just a new shitcoin every cycle, you know? This time just happens to be XRP, I guess. I don't know. Next time it'll be something else, you know? So, you know, I wrote, in my article there, like, why these things are all, effectively useless or pointless or scams. But I think you guys covered it, pretty well, pretty well.
I'd like to go ahead and spend just the last 10 minutes or so talking about what's going on in California and the implications, of these events and how they're going to make things a lot more difficult. So the wildfires are just, they're destroying. I think the estimates are over 10,000 structures. There's over 100,000 people that are displaced. The fires aren't controlled, and it looks like they're having issues with looters coming through and stealing all the build or stealing you know, things from buildings that haven't been destroyed, but have been evacuated. And it appears that one of the fires, at least, was arson, and they have the person who started it under custody. He was actually found by local residents. Hey, go ahead.
I was just going to take over for you because I heard your dog had something to say there. So, but yeah, I saw some reports of similar stuff. I don't know like the scale of it, but I read that, you know, there was some, you know, undesirable starting fires and at least some of the stuff I saw, and I didn't fact check or validate this. I just kind of saw it scrolling across Twitter at some point. But, you know, there's people that were trying to start fires in places to get people to evacuate so that they could loot their houses and stuff. You know, hopefully that's an exaggeration. I hope that, you know, there's not that much depravity. But you never know. I mean, it's, you know, anytime these things go on, there are, undesirables that will try to take advantage of it. And that's a sad reality. And that's not just like a California thing. It's not really new. I forget what that hurricane was that hit New York City, but a buddy of mine lived there. And like they, like two blocks away from where they were was fine, but where they were was like hit pretty hard. And like, him and his neighbor had to like post up, his neighbor was a cop. They had to like post up with like a shotgun to protect the houses because people were looting stuff. And you know, it's just pretty crazy. And like literally like you could walk to places that were mostly unscathed. But like that's just the way that people were, in that like minimally like in terms of like the damage and the scale of it, it wasn't anything compared to like a complete like devastation, you know, like maybe for that block, it was completely devastated, but not for the entire area.
And it's weird how that stuff kind of happens. You see it all the time in different disaster areas. There's just, you know, complete city blocks destroyed and there's just a lone house just unscathed. So, one of the things I wanted to start hitting on though was insurance and how this is just going to be a nightmare. Like, insurance premiums have been going up for the last 3 or 4 years at just unprecedented rates. And now it's just going to only be, even worse in these areas that are at high risk. And again, I don't see a way out of this. And I don't know how you're able to reel in the insurance prices, and a lot of homeowners are going to be trapped, right? Because if you have a mortgage on your house, you're obligated to continue to carry home insurance. And a lot of these home insurance policies in these high risk areas are almost more or equal to the actual mortgage payment. And it's just starting to become really, really scary. And I really can't see a way out for them. I don't know how you get these insurance premiums to come down. And you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. Cause if you have your house paid off, again, you're not obligated to have home insurance. So you save that money, but again, you always run that risk if there's a disaster that comes through and you're not paying for that insurance. Again, you lose everything. So Bob, Omar, Shane.
Cool. Yeah, Coleman. I mean, this is just a huge, huge topic. I mean, we could kind of go down a lot of different rabbit holes. I think, you know, for this particular situation, you got to look at who the bag holders are going to be on this, right? So some people suspect that the state of California will get support from the federal government. But in the end, like, if you really look at it, we're all just paying for the mistakes of the, you know, the folks who run the show. And, you know, another thing is, like, at some point, like, this starts hitting people's pocketbooks. So one of the things, you know, that people may or may not realize, like if you've owned a house, a lot of times people are buying houses and they're getting financing, right? They don't have the cash to do it. And so you have to provide some sort of insurance in order to finance the house. And so, at some point people aren't going to be able to afford homes in certain areas, and that's going to bring the prices down. Right. So if people who, you know, are sure you need your house to live in, and it has some utility, but if you're using it as a store of value, which I think, you know, the American dream up until the pandemic has been, you know, home ownership. And it was a great way for people to have a house, a place to live, to lay your head at night and, build a family and do it by borrowing money and having that payment remain the same for a very long period of time, and allowing time to, you know, go by, and again keeping your payment the same, but the issue, well, I guess the benefit was, you know, the value of the house would go up. And so I think, you know, when you start to see situations like this where one, it becomes unsafe. So, you know, I feel for all the people that are out there and lost their homes, but you know, at some point, someone's got to pay the piper. Like there's consequences for these things. And, you know, I'm not trying to make this political or anything, but We need leaders, people who understand the repercussions of the actions that are taken. And, you know, insurance is just one thing. And I think this trend will continue, in certain areas where you have, excess risk, where insurance companies, you know, just say like, hey, we can't function. And in fact, it's to the, if we do insure in this area, it's to the detriment of every one of our policyholders, because at some point we may not be able to process all the claims. And, you know, we want, insurance companies are kind of like banks in a way. You want them to be solvent, right? You want them to have good risk management, and you want them to be able to pay out claims if you have an issue. And so where they're pulling out, or where they deem, these certain areas uninsurable, it really is kind of pulling and tugging at some of the fabrics of our society. And we see it in the money system, but we're also now starting to see it, leach into, you know, the insurance arena. So we could go a lot of different ways. I don't want to bore people. I know we're at the top of the hour, but I think there, you could have, you know, hours of discussion on insurability and the impacts, that it has, a lot of different areas here.
Bob, I think this is a really interesting topic, man, especially as it relates to Bitcoin going forward, because when you look at a scarce asset in a insurance class, what do you, I mean, you can't print money out of thin air anymore in terms of rebuilding in areas that get hit by hurricanes or mudslides or wildfires. At some point, what does it even make sense? If you've got a truly scarce asset that you can't just print out thin air, this is going to be much, much harder going forward. I think the only thing that possibly saves, you know, this in terms of an aspect of, you know, an insurance model is the fact that, you know, prices on a Bitcoin standard should come down. So, you know, if you, you know, some, at some point built, you know, let's just use the pizza, you know, scenario where you spent $10,000 or 10,000 Bitcoin on a pizza in the future when it only costs a fraction of a Bitcoin. That's going to be great if you're a long-term Bitcoin holder. But if you're new to Bitcoin, this idea of living and possibly rebuilding in areas that are hit by natural disasters often, I think that's going to change things dramatically, in terms of who lives there and really, you know, population density in those areas, on top of that. That's, I think Bitcoin changes this completely.
I think it does, but for everyone who's not there, do you, like, the only way out, I think, and you kind of alluded to it, Bob, is that you're going to have state, I guess, state-owned or state-sponsored insurance premiums, because a lot of these companies are just going to move out. Do you see that as the future?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, I think until people start holding elected leaders responsible, I think we see more of the same. I don't know that the government want to get into the business of being actuaries and assessing risk. I mean, it's, you know, in our country to date, we don't privatize a lot of these things. And that's generally been a good thing. You let the market handle it. And I'm hoping that the market does handle this, but, I guess it's a possibility in a state like California where the leadership is as it is. But I think it would be, I don't want to say unprecedented, but it would be peculiar. I'll say that. And that people would put more and more trust in elected leaders to do right by them where they've already failed. And you can see, like, if the private market doesn't want access to one of the richest states with some of the highest insurance premiums and they can't make money doing it and they perceive the risk too great, like, you would hope that there would be a a correction, right? Like that policies would need to change and that lawmakers would need to make promises to private insurance companies to get them to come back in to that market. So I guess it could go either way. Nothing would surprise me at this point, but, you know, generally speaking, we don't privatize industries. And so I would hope the pendulum would swing back the other way where, you know, this would be the accountability piece that, that would make lawmakers and, you know, the people in charge in California, take steps and prove to the insurance companies that, these areas are insurable because they've built out the infrastructure and the safeguards to make sure that the risk is worth taking for the insurance companies.
That's like decades out though, right? Like you can't just say, I'm going to do this thing and then the insurance companies come back. I mean, I think that, like from a market perspective, the only thing that really makes sense is that less people live there and, you know, it's probably going to be wealthier people. And, you know, that's not to put on the tinfoil hat, but, you know, that's the same thing they said with like, Hawaii. And now, you know, they're saying it already about California and stuff too, that they're trying to clear it out. But just for like, regardless of the cause or what led to this, you know, just from like the insurance perspective, like, you know, if something's risky, you have to charge more and that's just going to price people out. Or, you know, like you said, if you own the house outright, you don't have to get insurance, which I think is crazy to do. You know, but I think the end result will be
self-insurance. It's the only people that can afford to do it are the people who can self-insure.
Yeah. So like, I think that's what's going to end up happening, right? Like, I think it's just going to price people out, you know, that, cause people are already paying, like you mentioned earlier, people are already paying, more for insurance than they are for their mortgage in a lot of cases. And it's just like, you know, if you look at a city and you're like, oh, why am I paying, you know, for rent when I could buy a house for, you know, an hour away? It's going to be the same kind of like logic. They're going to look at those prices and they're going to say, well, I can move, you know, to a different place and I can afford like a house and not have to pay all this money for insurance. It's the same thing with like taxes. All those things like will go in and it'll one way or another force fewer people to live there. I think I don't know that area. Like I'm not from the West Coast, but like I think the difficult part will be like the lower income like service. Like you see this in like ski towns and stuff now. A lot of people complain that like ski towns are like really expensive and people that like work there can't afford to live there. So it might be like one of those situations where they try to like, you know, bus in workers and stuff like that. I don't know exactly, how that'll play out, but I don't think it's good for like the population density out there. I think that's going to end up decreasing. But again, I don't know how dense it was to begin with. Like I know it was like north of LA, so I don't know if it was like suburban or if it was up in like the rural, more rural spots that are burning. I'm not really sure.
I'm not entirely sure either. But it's going to be, like Shane said earlier, it's max pain for a lot of people. And so we need a solution for this. And I really don't know what it's going to be. But the ripple effects from this are, I think, going to be pretty consequential over the coming months and years. So.
I think the one thing, Coleman, that I think is interesting, and we have this to some degree too, because we speak in an echo chamber sometimes related to Bitcoin, but I think the interesting thing is like for some people, it's crystal clear, that there's culpability from, you know, the elected officials. But I've heard other people, you know, on the other side kind of saying, well, you know, this is just, ramifications of global warming or climate change. And so it's just, an interesting thing, like which ideas will win out? And are people so brainwashed despite the fact that they've lost their home that they can blame it solely on, you know, an act of God, and that it's all climate change and that there's no responsibility from the folks who are in leadership, that were put there by the people who are most harmed by this.
So Shane, Eomar, did you guys have any final comments you wanted to make on this?
I think the last thing I'd say is, I mean, I've got a brother-in-law out there, in LA, and when, you know, when we're hearing updates and everything of what's going on, if you're in the area, you need to strongly consider what the future might bring out there. This is a really bad situation. If the power grid does go down out there, which I heard part of it is failing, This is going to be, I don't want to say somewhat catastrophic. It is going to be catastrophic. When power grids go down, there's no water. The remaining buildings that are left and the people that are there are going to they're going to be fending for themselves. And I can only imagine what that looks like after going to North Carolina, where, you know, a lot of people are faith-based and a lot of people are there to help each other out. There were still people that were, you know, obviously taking advantage of the situation to the point where, you know, people were disappearing, you know, that were alive after the floods were gone, right? And that's the thing, is there is a ton that's, you know, that could go wrong out there, and you need to be prepared and start making plans for evacuation if that's the case. I think what's going on out there is, you know, I don't want to put tinfoil hats on everybody, but it's one of those things where I'm not real sure that this was by accident after seeing some things, and I know we don't have time to get into it, but if that is the case, and things deteriorate more, the violence that could be seen, the looting, the human trafficking, especially in this type of situation, is going to absolutely be massive, especially in that area. And I'd highly, highly recommend, if you don't understand that, and you need help, maybe reach out. But this is a real critical point for a lot of people who live in that area, that, you know, this might be a good time to seek refuge somewhere else.
And I think you are seeing a lot of people flee, again, California, just simply due to the cost of everything. And so a lot of people just aren't going to be able to afford to rebuild there. So a lot of them are going to get relocated forcefully. And again, it's extremely unfortunate what's going on. And I wish everybody over there the best. And if you're a veteran, or a member of this group, and you're in that area and you need help, please reach out to us. Reach out to me and we'll see what we can do. I do think we have some people that are close by that may be able to assist. So just send us a message. But that's it. That's going to be today's show. Don't want to end on really a down note, but it looks like the Bitcoin price, again, kind of just sitting right there around 93K. So again, treat this as an excellent buying opportunity. I don't think we're going to get down to an 8 handle. I really don't. I see so much doom and gloom and in-house fighting on Twitter that I think this is probably a local bottom.
Your dog, your family friend there can curse.
You should really train that guy, Coleman.
I do.
He's just really excited about Bitcoin. Every time Coleman mentions Bitcoin, he starts barking, so.
He just sees the damn mail guy. He's just hanging out on his phone. He doesn't like him. But yeah, so again, this is a perfect buying opportunity. Not financial advice, but again, anytime it dips, just take advantage of it. You have possible nation states going to announce that they've been buying Bitcoin in 10, 11 days. So do with that information as you'd like. But for me, again, if it keeps staying in here, I'm just trying to do everything I can. If it gets to an 8 handle, my wife and I'll have to have a pretty serious conversation about which kid we want to try and see if we can sell and try and get some more. That's a joke. I'm just joking, everybody. But I really do think that, we're on the uprise here. I think the price will start taking off. So with that, that's all I have. Join us next week, Monday morning, 10 a.m. I do believe that's when Joe will be able to sit down with us, Joe Consorti. Talk a little bit of macro, talk about the rise in the treasury yields, and just kind of get his input on how that's going to play out. And then we have some big guests lined up over the coming weeks as well, so we'll keep you posted as that starts to unfold. But that's all I have for you. Thank you again. Eomar, did you have something to say?
Yeah, just going to say, don't shitcoin. It's like making chili without beans and putting Fritos in it.
Remind me next week, guys, not to allow Eomar up here on the panel.
It's perfect.
You completely derailed this closing comment here, Eomar, so thank you. That's it, guys. Just go out there, have fun playing with your Bitcoin, but don't shitcoin. Listen to what Eomar said.